You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. Becomes infectious.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of being, like, really hungry late at night, and you're looking around, and there's nothing in the fridge, and there's nothing in the pantry, so to speak. I live in New York. I don't have a pantry. I've got a cabinet. You know what I mean? It's got a lot of canned food in it. And then you're like, I guess I'll eat a slice of plain whole wheat sandwich bread. So then you eat the slice of sandwich bread, and you're like, all right, this is food, I guess. Anyway, I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. the Provolone Ranger. And this is episode 256. On today's show, I'm joined by two very special guests. First, I'm joined by Knicks rookie point guard Frank Ntilikina. Maybe you guys have heard of him. And we talk about all kinds of stuff. We talk about him playing in the rookie game. We talk about what kind of goals he sets for himself. We talk about who he wants to dunk on. That was an interesting part of the conversation. But I had about good 15 minutes with Frank. And I think you guys are going to enjoy it. Then I talked to the wonderful Jonathan Macri. He is a contributor at Elite Sports New York and Hoops Habit, and we talk about all kinds of stuff. We talk about the trade deadline, what the Knicks didn't do at the trade deadline, and see what we think about that. We talk about Jeff and the kids, how he's treating the young Knickerbockers as we head into the second half of the season. We talk about Tim Hardaway Jr.'s slump, and his canter, and his place on the team going forward, and what Kristaps Porzingis' injury means for the Knicks as they build their squad in next season and beyond. I'm very excited for this show. I think you guys will like it. Without any further ado, let's bring in Frank Ntilikina and let's start the show.
Yes!
First of all, Frank, thank you so much for joining me today, and congrats on making the Rising Stars game. I'm wondering, was that a goal you set for yourself at the beginning of the season, or was it more of like a happy surprise?
Of course, starting the season, I thought about it, about doing it, but I wasn't like that focused. I was just like focusing about playing my games, but when I learned that I was about to learn to play the Mandu Rising Star, I was so excited about just being part of it.
Yeah, I saw the video where Jeff Hornacek announced it during practice. It was a very adorable moment. It was great to see, just to see the joy on your face. Like, anytime you see someone accomplish a goal like that, like, it's a really happy thing. What are you most looking forward to when it comes to actually playing in the game? Is there someone that you are looking forward to playing for or playing against, or are you just kind of happy to show up there and, like, take it all in?
Oh, I was just excited about just playing that game, playing with my teammates, the world team. And also against some of my friends, like Donovan Mitchell. It's gonna be fun. I just want to go out there and then have no regrets at the end.
Oh, for sure. Now, you are a rookie. You're a 19-year-old rookie. Obviously, you know, you're incredibly talented. But, you know, any player, and especially a rookie, you know, you're trying to improve a lot. So I'm curious, you know, you said you didn't really have a goal to make the Rising Stars game, although, you know, obviously you thought about it. But I'm wondering, like, what kind of goals do you set for yourself let's say, like, at the beginning of the season heading into it? Do you have, you know, like, how specific are you focusing on certain things? Or because it's your first season, is it just sort of like everything, you know?
Actually, at the beginning of the season, I was just like, so let's go. I know it's an adjustment coming into the country, coming into the best league in the world. So I was just like focusing on like working the more I can work and just being the best player I can be at the end of the season. I think I will be able to set more goals going into the next season.
So I'm kind of curious. You know, there's a lot of talk about the rookie wall. You've heard of that, right? The rookie wall?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So do you think it's a real thing? Like, how do you think about the rookie wall? I mean, obviously you are playing more games, more minutes at a professional level than you have in the past. How do you look at that?
I think it's like the adjustment that rookies are making going into this special season, like very long season. It can be physically very, very tough to play. It's physically very tough to play at this level. So, but I heard also that all player rookies are not hit that well. So the season is very long, and everybody in the league at like kind of moment where they down. But the most important thing is like to keep working and to keep trying to be consistent.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's why everyone's been so cranky past couple of weeks. Starting to fight with each other a little bit around the league. I'm curious about something. I've always sort of wondered this. Like, when your coach, when Jeff Hornacek takes you out of a game, in that, like, moment, he's making a substitution, would he tell you, like, why he might be taking you out, like, in that moment? Or is that something that he kind of talks about after the game with you, or do you not even like think about it that way? Is it just that the coach wants to make a substitution and that's enough?
If he calls my name to jump on the court, I'll be ready to go on the court. But I mean, that's because this is the coach decision if you want me to go off the court and on the bench. So as a player, you gotta accept it.
But is he ever like, you know, like, oh, I didn't like the way, like, that turnover wasn't okay, I need you to sit out for a little bit? Or does that kind of thing not really happen?
Yeah, sometimes during the game when he took me off the game, yeah, he explained me why, he explained me what I did wrong. But sometimes it's just like,
yeah,
how the game is going on.
Yeah, for sure. No, I totally understand that. I'm hoping I can ask you a couple fun questions. I'm wondering if you could dunk on anyone in NBA history, either someone playing now or, you know, someone like 50 years ago, who would it be? Any of your heroes you looked up to that you would have just liked to dunk on?
Okay.
Let him see what's up.
No, so that's a fun question. Okay, I would say Willie Hernan Gomez, because he's my big friend. So
you might get a chance. You guys play Charlotte one more time this year, right? Oh my god.
Yeah.
Following up on that, if you could now, like, you I think are like a fantastic defender, like already in your rookie season. Like us Knicks fans, we're very into what you're doing on that end of the court. If you could play defense against anyone in the NBA, either playing now or in history, is there anyone that you would like to try, you know, putting your defensive chops on display against? Anyone you'd like to play defense against?
All the big players, all the skilled players in this league, I mean, it's always challenging to go against them. I would say maybe Stephen Curry, Kyrie Irving, all these guys, Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
These guys were phenomenal in the offensive end. So, like, to me, as a competitor, it's always fun to just, like, say, okay, I'm gonna try and I'm gonna try to limit these guys.
Yeah, if you want to be the best, you want to go up against the best, right?
Exactly.
Sense. Yeah. Now, as you kind of like mold your game over time, obviously you've been playing basketball for a very long time. Are there any players that you specifically like are, obviously you are yourself, but are there any players that you like look up to as like, I want to play like that guy? Is there someone that you like try to kind of model your game on, or maybe a couple players?
Mm-hmm. I like to watch every player in the league with watch what they do the best. So it's going to be tough to give you one player. But, yeah, as you say, I want to just build my own game.
Yeah, for sure. I think you've got, like, great court vision. Is there anyone that you think has, like, the best court vision in the league, or someone that who you'd look to who makes, like, really excellent passes?
Maybe Rajon Rondo.
Who's that?
Rajon Rondo.
Oh, Rajon Rondo. Oh, for sure.
Chris Paul.
I'm a, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a former Celtic, so it's a little sad to hear that. But he was a great player. I'll give you credit for that.
Yeah.
No, he's had some of the most incredible passes I've ever seen. So that's definitely a good one.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, I've seen you. You've been asked about this a couple times. People love making up nicknames for you. I know that you've been on record. You say, like, you know, you think the French Prince is okay. There's one that a lot of people are into, but I think it's kind of dumb. And I'm just wondering, I want to know what you think about it. And if you think it's great, don't be afraid to tell me, because, you know, it's your life, whatever you're into, you're into. But I'm just kind of curious what you think once and for all, because I don't stop talking about it on my podcast. What do you think of the nickname Frankie Smokes?
I mean, I don't know. It's true that a lot of people, I heard it a lot of time. I don't really know the meaning of it.
They think it's sorry. No, keep going.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, I think, you know, they think it sounds like an old time, like an old school mobster name. I guess because you're, like, in New York. Like, that's – I mean, I think it's dumb. I don't think it fits you. So, I mean, that's – I mean, if you like it, you like it. But I was just kind of curious what your opinion was.
It's okay. I heard a lot of things. I heard French Prince, French Toast, French Montana. I heard what else? Frank Needy.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So,
French Montana is pretty good.
But I like French Prince.
French Prince, okay. I'm wondering, I think I've only got you for like another minute or two, but has anything about living in New York or, you know, the New York area surprised you, or is it pretty much what you expected coming into the season?
I think it's like I expected.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been visiting the city before coming here, and I always want, like, it was a dream for me to play here.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I knew a little bit how the city was, like, with the sports team and how they work. So I didn't know how living here as a player was, but I've heard a lot about it, and so I expected it a little bit, but I like it. I like it a lot.
Has anyone taken you to a good pizza place yet?
Sorry?
Has anyone taken you to a good pizza place yet?
Yeah. I've been to some pizza places, yeah. Really good.
If you need any recommendations, let me know, Frank. I'm curious. So the season, you know, it'll be over like as soon as you, like next thing you know, like we're coming up on the All-Star break, but then there's not too many games left. What are you sort of looking to get out of the rest of the season? You know, it's obviously very unfortunate. Chris Stapps went down with the ACL tear. You know, it's hurt your guys' playoff chances, obviously. So, like, when you're sitting here and you're thinking about what you want to do for the next couple months, what are you looking forward to getting out of the rest of the season?
Just getting the more things I can get individually and with the team. I think we can still learn a lot in this in this end of the season. We have like some young good players that can step up and like go through some really good experiences. So it might help us to learn a lot and to be ready for it for our future.
That's great. Well, I just want to thank you for spending a couple minutes with me, Frank, today. I know you've got a super busy schedule, so I'm not going to keep I'm not going to keep you any longer, but thanks. Congrats again on the Rising Stars game, and I wish you, all Knicks fans wish you the best of luck going forward.
That was fun, right? First time having a New York Knick on the program. I know it wasn't like my best interview ever, but it was my first time as the primary option in the system. You know what I'm saying? I gotta learn how to pass out of double teams. Everyone's trying to improve in this thing. But anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed our conversation with Frank. I want to share with you now my conversation with Jonathan Macri. But first, I want to talk to fantasy sports fans. Listen up! Did you know that your chances of winning on draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? It's true. That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site. I play fantasy sports on 7,946 sites, and I rank them all on an Excel spreadsheet, and Draft has held the top spot on that spreadsheet for 3 months now. That's how good they are. That's because I don't get crushed by the pros when I play Draft. And it's not just me. Everyone knows this. That's why they play Draft. More than 1 million people have downloaded Draft. You can play in a live draft right now, like right this second. I'm not even kidding you. You'll be done in 5 minutes, and then when you win, because you're smart, not dumb like everyone says you are, but you're smart, you're going to get paid out the next day. Draft is not messing around. And drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit. But you gotta use my promo code LONICKS. That's right. Playing a real money draft for free just by using my promo code LONICKS. But it gets so much better than that. Like, that's good. So much better than that. Like, the difference between Jahlil Okafor and Kristaps Porzingis. Like, it gets so much better than Jahlil Okafor. I'm about to hit you with Kristaps. Draft is so sure that you're going to love it that they're even offering Locked On Knicks listeners, that's you, a money-back guarantee up to $100. That's so much money. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play free right now with promo code LONICKS. All right. Let's bring in the wonderful Jonathan Macri. I had a great time talking to you. To him. I'm talking to you right now, Jonathan. I had a great time talking to Jonathan, and I think you guys will enjoy our conversation. Let's bring him in. Jonathan, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay, James. I'm happy to be on. Happy to share the impending misery and doom of this season with someone else who is such a passionate fan of this team that we should all question ourselves why we put ourselves through this.
I like to think of this season as, you know how forests have to basically light themselves on fire in order to stay healthy and regenerate?
Yes, I am familiar with that concept.
Yeah, so that's what's going on with the Knicks this year. They are lighting the season on fire so that the, you know, the like pine cones or whatever that are released from the conifers can then have the sap melted and the seeds released, and they can blossom and grow into one day, hopefully, Jarrett Jack's age 35 season.
You know what? I think the fact that we got conifers into the first 2 minutes of the pod means that not only is the podcast a success, but we could call the next season in which they're lighting themselves on fire a success as well.
I couldn't agree with you more. I want to kind of close up some loose ends on trade deadline discussion that I've had on the podcast. I've talked a lot about what the Knicks did do, you know, about the Billy Hernan Gomez trade, about the Emmanuel Mudiay trade, and we may touch on those throughout the podcast, but for right now, I'd like to kind of talk about what the Knicks didn't do, because I did get a lot of questions on this, both through email and Twitter. I appreciate you guys interacting with the show. Keep your comments and questions coming. But a lot of people were like, why didn't we trade Courtney Lee? Why didn't we trade Kyle O'Quinn? You know, Lance Thomas, Michael Beasley, you can throw into the mix. I'm curious what you think about that, if a mistake was made, if we can even know a mistake was made without, like, some information that might be missing. Where do you stand on that?
Sure. So I think there's a couple of things that are important to point out here. First of all, I mean, reading the tea leaves, it's pretty obvious that teams were not exactly lining up to give away first-round picks. I mean, Memphis held out till the very last minute to try to get a first for Tyreke Evans, who's on, you know, a one-year, $3 million contract, three and change. They couldn't get one. Marcus Smart, one of the best defensive guards in the league, you know, part of every Boston great plus-minus lineup. They couldn't get a first-round pick for him. So as far as Courtney Lee is concerned, and I went into the season saying, you know what, it's going to be really interesting whether or not they decide to move him for a first at the deadline. And to Knicks fans who are saying, why didn't they move him for a first? I hate to break it to you. That trade was not out there.
No.
And I get fans who were upset the fact that he's over 30. He's not part of the core going forward. But my question to them is just, what do you want to move him for? I mean, could you have gotten back probably maybe some expiring salary that expired next season, and a second-round pick, you know, maybe an extremely heavily first-round protected pick? Even that I doubt. So at that point, you have to ask yourself, well, you know, is there some benefit to keeping him around? And that's where I think this plays into the KP injury, because hearing Perry talk about this team and where he wants it to go and the value that he puts in putting a competent product on the floor, you know, they need bodies to throw out there next year. They can't approach next season saying, all right, well, you know what, we're going to win 25 games this year. They're going to try to at least be a competent, you know, around 500 team until KP comes back. And if you're going to do that, Courtney Lee's a guy that, you know, is not the worst player to keep around.
Yeah, I agree. And it's just not realistic to expect them to get rid of anyone over 25. Like, I'd be curious to know what the youngest team of all time was.
Has there ever been a team with...
What did you say?
We're going to see in a few weeks when Luke Kornet and the young guards and Hicks are all sharing the court together. And they could probably put five guys out there who are under 100 years old combined. So we're a few weeks away, but I think we're going to see it.
I haven't talked a lot about him. I don't think he factors big time into the future, but I'm curious what you think about Hicks in the...
I hope he doesn't factor big time into the future. My view on the guys that with Kornet and Hicks, and even to a lesser extent Dotson, who I was kind of high on going into the year, if even one of these guys could be a semi-rotation player moving forward, I think it's a win. Yeah. It's as simple as that.
I mean, so, yeah, it's... I always feel bad, and I probably need to get over this if I'm going to continue down this path of talking about sports people for a living, but, like, dismissing someone's entire career out of hand in, like, 2 seconds when they've been working their whole life for it. But, I mean, my eyes are my eyes. The stats are the stats. Like, Hicks...
I mean, it's easy for us to do. He's, you know, Hicks has worked hard to be here. Kornet looks like, hey, maybe down the line, play 5-10 minutes a game. But, I mean, I see Knicks fans on Twitter getting excited for, you know, having Luke Kornet fever, and it's just... You know, go out and get yourself some medicine for that, because it's probably not going to end well.
For sure. You mentioned Dotson. He's definitely part of the Knicks youth movement. on some level. And a lot of people sort of like used him as the occasional example of like, what are we doing? Why aren't we playing the kids? And I don't know if I'm guilty is the right word, but like I do that too. I get frustrated. But is it possible that we're overrating a second round pick because we're just like desperate for some change, some positivity? Like, or is Jeff being obnoxious about this, or is the truth somewhere in between? Like, what are your thoughts on Dotson specifically?
I mean, I knew as much about Dotson coming into the year as probably most semi-knowledgeable people that didn't study the draft for a living, which mm-hmm. is that he's a guy who played his fair share of college ball. Obviously, he transferred into Houston. So I think maybe the reason some fans were upset is because they figured, all right, he's a guy that's not coming in as a 19-year-old like Frank, so he should be able to contribute sooner rather than later. And obviously, other than those couple of starts I think he got earlier in the year when Timmy was out, he hasn't really seen the court that much. I tend to think that that's going to change after the All-Star break. I think Knicks fans who were, you know, have been lighting up Twitter over the last couple games at seeing Jarrett Jack on the court and Lance Thomas starting the last game, I think you're going to have one more game to be really upset about this, and right. then it's going to be a very different story. I'd be shocked if Dotson didn't get, you know, 15 to 20 minutes a night over the second half of the year. What he does with that, you know, who knows? That's right. anybody's guess. But
see, you know, I'd be shocked if he did get 15 to 20 minutes a night. I don't know.
Really? You would?
Like, is he really going to go from nothing? Because that's basically what it's been.
Well, I think what ties into this is Hardaway, you know, unless like the Space Jam aliens have actually gone into his body and taken all of his basketball ability, I think there's probably something physically not right with him. I know he's a gamer. I know he wants, even if he's not actively thinking it to himself, wants to justify that contract. So he's probably playing not at 100% right now. But at some point, you just kind of have to consider shutting him down, don't you?
I mean, the numbers are ugly. 0 for 8 from downtown on Monday night against the Sixers. He's 39 of his last 44. Or he's missed 39 of his last 44 attempts from downtown, so that's 5 for 44. You do wonder about the injuries with him. I mean, it's been a couple weeks now since he's been back, or a couple, you know, a little bit over a month or whatever. And it's, so you forget about it. But he went through, like, a serious injury, as he called it. Lots of rehab. I wouldn't be surprised if, like, part of, like, all it takes when you're competing at this level is just the littlest bit of, like, your timing being off. Like, the littlest bit of, like, a hesitation because maybe you don't feel 100% physically. I don't know if that's everything. I would suspect that that's only part of it. He does seem
I agree with you.
His body language is, like... Like he looks to really take things to heart when he's doing shitty.
You ever get the sense there are just some players who operate more in their own head as opposed to, you know, totally out there on the court? You know, Hardaway strikes me as that type of guy. He's a guy, I think, that, you know, when he's playing on the Garden floor and the crowd's going, like, he could look like a borderline all-star. But when things aren't going right, I mean, there are some players who could get themselves out of that quickly. And I think we've seen enough evidence that Hardaway might not be one of those guys. So it's probably not completely physical, but I don't think that's helping much.
I mean, most Knicks fans would jump down my throat for even saying this, but I mean it in a slightly disparaging way. He's reminding me a little bit too much of John Starks lately. It's like, he's so streaky. I mean, but there have been things you can look to that are not just, oh, well, his head can't stay in the game. Like, there are, you know. Like, I do think he feels Kristaps being out a lot. Like, well, I'll say this about Hardaway. Like, I think he really wants to be a team player. Like, I think he wants to show that he's a more complete player. Like, he's not necessarily impacting the game very much right now in any dimension. But, like, earlier in his career, he would have had, like, zeros across the board in the box score if he wasn't scoring. And now he's still getting some rebounds. He's still getting some assists, some steals. Like, and
well,
it was nice
to see against Philly. He drove the lane a couple times and got some easy baskets. And that's great. But, you know, you want to tell him, okay, do that more. If you're not hitting the far side of a barn from outside, maybe go to the rim. But I mean, what are you going to do? Tell a shooter not to try to shoot his way out of a slump? I don't know. Can you do that? I'm not a professional athlete. I don't know how that goes. I'm sure it's a conversation Jeff has had with him. But I at this point, I think he feels like he's come this far. Maybe he needs to keep throwing it up there.
To round out the discussion on, like, Jeff and the kids, so to speak, it sounds like, so you feel pretty positive that we're going to see massive lineup changes after the All-Star break, or minutes allocation decisions.
If I had to guess, I would say probably that Jarrett Jack's going to start his last game tomorrow night. That would be my guess. And I would hope that it'll be Ntilikina taking that starting spot, although you never know. Would it floor me if he gave the opportunity to Moutier? No. But I think it'll probably be Frank. And then from there, I think everything will kind of trickle on down. I mean, Hardaway, we'll see what happens with him. Lee will probably go down to 20, 25 minutes a night. And you know, Cantor's the interesting one, though, because Cantor clearly, he likes to be out there. He likes to be a part of the action. I don't know if he's a guy that's going to take kindly to being sat down towards the end of the year. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you know what? Who else are they going to play? I mean, Quinn's still there. I know we didn't touch on him at the trade deadline, part of the conversation. But, you know, he's already got to be thinking about next season. He's going to want to probably get his minutes. But I think more than anything, you're probably going to want to count on Frank playing bigger minutes, seeing Dotson 15 to 20 a night, and then the other guys they just brought up from Westchester. Burke, though, Burke's probably the most interesting to me because I don't know. What do you think as far as him? Is he in the team's plans moving forward, in your opinion?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's so hard to figure out, like, what they're trying to do. Because, like, even given, you know, this, like, all right, they're going to, you know, make some changes at All-Star break. Like, they've kind of alluded to that. Like, when I look at a decision like the lineup last night where you've got Jarrett Jack, Tim Hardaway, Lance Thomas, Kyle O'Quinn, and Enes Kanter, I'm like, what are you trying to do there? Like, none of those guys can shoot except for Tim Hardaway, who's mired in the worst shooting slump of his career. Like, what are they trying to accomplish? So I'm just, like, very confused about what their motivations are. It seemed like they were very willing to take a flyer on him until Moutier came, and now it's just Moutier and Frank, which is, like, on some level super understandable because they're both much younger than Burke. You know, Burke's kind of proved over a longer time that it's more of a long shot for him to fulfill his potential. But if they thought, it was worth it to give him minutes and see what he can do, before getting Moutier, I don't understand what's changed so much that, like, now they're giving him, like, DMPs or 4 minutes. Like, shouldn't, like, these guys are all big question marks. I mean, I'm a huge Frank fan. Like, I think he can still be a great point guard. Everyone's now just like, oh, he's a two because, like, Moutier is more comfortable, you know, being the lead guard right now. But, like, I'm a huge Frank fan, but none of these guys are short things. Like, in my opinion, they should be giving them all not an equal shot. I think Frank should get the most, Moutier close behind, and then, like, but while Kristaps is out, like, why not, like, do everything you can to see if this guy has something. And it's only been a couple games of him not playing a lot, but I don't even understand the him not playing a lot when you're, like, losing by 30 points, you're, you know, whatever. Like, it's so confusing to me, and they don't really, they've not elucidated for me, like, why they make the decisions they make in the lineup from day to day in a way that I find, like, credible.
And that's the stuff that, if you've been watching this team for years or decades, as is the case with a lot of us, me included, It's year after year, there's decisions that make you feel like, regardless of who's running the show, regardless of who are the guys in the suits sitting in those seats watching the games, right now it's Mills and Perry, that there's just not a clear set plan on what they're going to do. And you hate to say that because, you know, there's the people that say that, and as a fan, you see it, and you're like, God, that's not fair. It's different people now. You know, Perry has his own plan. But then the stuff happens over and over again. like with Burke, comes in, he's, you know, looks like the best guy on the court in a couple of the games that he was in at first, and now it's this. So I get the frustration of every Knicks fan who sees that and is like, what the hell? To that, I guess the only counterpoint that I would say is this. Burke, to me, seems like if he's going to be anything in the league, it's going to be a quality backup.
Yeah.
And now that they had the opportunity to get Moutier, there's still that faint hope that maybe he could be a starting guard.
Sure.
So, all right. Well, you have 25 games left in the season. Might as well see what you could do with Moutier, playing with Frank, playing not with Frank. So maybe that pushes Burke to the back of the line just because, you know, again, his ceiling at this point is more of a backup. He doesn't profile, I think, to me, at this point, as someone who's ever going to be a starting guard in the league. Maybe he'll start for you in a pinch, but not long term.
Yeah.
And then that gets into the issues of Frank and Emmanuel. And I listened to the pod that you had earlier in this week, and you had a great conversation about Moutier, and a lot of great points were brought up. And I guess, at this point, where do you come down on? Do you think that he is still salvageable as a big-time starting guard in the NBA?
I do. I actually got a really well-thought-out email today from someone who was a little bit confused on my stance. They're like, why are you so down on Moutier? And so up on Frank, like, Moutier was seen as the bigger prospect coming in. And you know, they're both so young still, which is true. I mean, like, Moutier, you know, he's still, like, very young. I think it comes down to a couple things. And one of them, unfortunately, like, I hate to lean on this, is very much just a gut instinct. And those are often, like, very wrong. So I'm not going to spend too much time on that. But, like, when I look at Moutier, I'm like, I don't know. I just don't see this guy getting so much better. But I know that
that's fair, though. That gut instinct. Listen, you've been watching basketball for how many years? Sometimes you have a gut feeling.
Yeah.
And a lot of times those gut feelings are right. I don't think you're wrong on Moutier.
Yeah, I just don't. He seems like someone. And he has improved a couple of things. A lot of things have not improved. And what he, like, I talked about this the other day, like, his shot efficiency, like, his points per shot attempt, like, they've improved every year, but it went from, like, 8th percentile for a point guard to, like, 35th percentile this year. I mean, and so, like, and it's 3 years. It's three, like, I hope that, you know, he's had 3 years to do things. And I know his situation has gotten, like, worse with Murray, like, really coming onto the scene strong for Denver. But in 3 years, he's shown very little. I'm very skeptical of his three-point improvement with it all coming from the corners. I mean, it's better than nothing, but from anywhere but the corners, he's still a very poor three-point shooter. I don't understand how he can be such a poor finisher at the... I mean, I do understand how he can be such a poor finisher at the rim, but for someone like him to be in this situation this late in his life, that seems like... I don't know.
It makes no sense to me whatsoever, the stuff at the rim, because you look at a guy that size and, you know, with that physical ability, it just, that's the only thing that doesn't really add up. And because it doesn't add up so much, I think maybe that's the one thing that I would guess that he could get better at. As far as the three-point shooting goes, you know, the numbers on above the break threes right now are he's shooting around 30% on those.
Right.
So to me, let's say a miracle happens and he could bump that up to even 35%. Okay, that would be great. But is it at a point where teams are actually going to go above picks and guard him out there? Probably not. You know, and like some fans might be listening and say, well, James Harden shoots about, you know, whatever, 36 or so percent from out there. Yeah, the difference is that James Harden teams are gearing up to stop him every single possession. And guys like that who have maybe similar percentages from out there on the three-point line. With Moutier, even if he were to make that leap, I don't get the sense that he's ever going to be a guy who teams have to game plan around his three-point shooting. And if that's going to be the case, I think his upside is maybe not severely limited, but, you know, then you're talking about a guy, okay, can you make him into what Tony Parker was for most of his career? A guy that just operates inside the three-point line and is just one of the best finishers in the league. Well, mm-hmm. Moody is not there yet either. He's nowhere close to that. So I don't know. Yeah. As much as I'd love to get excited about him because he was the former number seven pick, I just get the sense that maybe you're looking at someone who's going to top out as a first guard off the bench.
Yeah, and that high draft pick is like very, you know, it has the power to seduce, but the Knicks have like a billion high draft picks right now, and half of them are not very good. You know, I mean, for all like of Beasley's entertaining theatrics, like he's not a very positive player when you factor in both sides of the court. Ennis Kanter. Actually, you know what? I want to talk about Ennis Kanter, but first,
sure.
But first, I just want to remind everyone that they are listening to the Locked On Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you like what you hear, head on over to iTunes, rate us 5 stars. It would be greatly appreciated. Once again, that's Locked On Knicks. All right, let's talk about Ennis, or as Jared Jack would say, Ennis! Ennis!
So Ennis, I think, is one of the more fascinating players in the league because, and James, back me up on this, is there anybody who is quite the lightning rod on social media, the Knicks Twitter, that Ennis Kanter is?
Oh, by far, yeah. He's the most polarizing and both like people discussing him and what he does on Twitter. Yeah, for sure. Lightning rod.
Yeah, and something got me last night because they were in the process of blowing the game in the fourth quarter, which we all knew would happen anyway. But regardless, Clyde had a line or something about how, you know, Philly was out-hustling the Knicks. Well, everybody except Kanter. And I'm thinking about that, and I'm like, you know, I get why fans latch on to him, because it's easy to squint and see a guy who's pulling down offensive rebounds. And even you could look at some advanced stats and be like, well, he's a high usage guy and he's really efficient from the field. But then if you just watch the games, I don't understand how anybody thinks that you could be an NBA team in 2018 and survive with a center who doesn't protect the rim, can't defend out in space, doesn't shoot from distance, and, oh, by the way, is making $18 million a year.
He is almost the perfect test case for why, like, advanced stats still have a long way to go. And I don't know if a long way to go is the right way to phrase that, but because people who know what they're doing with them use them properly. But, like, for why, like, some people, some of the more, like, mouth-breathing WFAN caller, like, subsets of fandom are like, fuck advanced stats, I say nothing. Because they look at Kanter, someone who has, like, a PER, although the same people probably love Kanter, but, like, he is one of the highest PERs in the league, like, consistently. And yet, you look at some other stats, which could also be considered advanced, like a net rating, and he's, like, the lowest Nick of any regular. And that, to me, makes a lot of sense. I do like Ennis Kanter a lot as, like, a guy. But the way he, like, professes his love for everyone he plays like, it almost... It reminds me of this guy I know, kind of like tangentially, who's like a friend of a friend of a friend. And I follow.
Way to preface this to distance yourself from the person you're about to talk about.
He's a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend. And he's always on Instagram with like whoever his girlfriend at the time is, being like, I love my baby so much. And like just posting pictures of her.
And you're we all know this guy.
And you're like,
we all have that friend.
You're like,
it's the same friend. I have the same friend.
You're like, dude, you said that 2 months ago about the last one. And like all the girlfriends kind of look the same. It's like a little weird and creepy. But it's...
No, that's Ennis Kanter. That's Ennis Kanter.
It's a little... He's 100%. A little bit of a snake oil salesman. Like, I do think he cares about his teammates and like being there as a teammate and like giving his all. Like, I don't think that's bullshit. But like, he's also like a smooth talker, you know?
He is. And I think he also... is smarter than maybe he lets on. He knows that in this city with this fan base, what's going to sell these particular fans. Mm-hmm. And he knows people are going to eat up, you know, everything that he's selling. Again, I don't think he doesn't mean it. I just think he knows what he's saying when it comes out of his mouth.
For sure.
You know, and I think on a more serious note, one of the most fascinating questions that this team has to face moving forward is, okay, he has this player option for next year. What if over the summer his people come to Perry and Mills and company and say, you know what, we will exercise, we'll bypass the player option, but we'll only do it if you sign us to an extension at like a lower annual salary, but give us some more years. And that's, to me, going to be a really interesting question as far as from a team building standpoint for the Knicks, because, and again, it all leads back to KP. If Porzingis is going to come back and be slightly diminished athletically, you're going to need to play him more time at the five, which, by the way, everybody knows that's his best position anyway. All the stats yeah. back it up. So, I mean, do you want to bring Enes Kanter back, even if he's willing to come for, what, $12 million a year, $10 million a year, $8 million, you know? And it gets into some of those questions, which I think is really interesting.
I can't figure out what the Knicks think of him, because even when they've been giving him minutes above everyone else, they would still sit him in the fourth quarter so frequently, which I think they should if they're trying to win a lot of the times. There's like maybe even one or two times where I'm like, they could really use like a big body in here, but like usually not. And so I don't know like what they think of him, but I do know the salary at which I'd be comfortable having him back would be, I feel like, an unprecedented pay cut for a player. Like, how could you be making $18 million and then come back for, like, I don't think I'd want to pay more than like $10 million. Even that feels a little high. Like, I feel like I'd be happy with $8 million as a like certified backup, but
I'll go one step further. I don't know if from a team building standpoint in the NBA where it's at right now, you want to be paying much above the minimum for a big man who can't do the things that Kanter can't do. That was a mouthful. because it's not like there aren't rim-running centers out there who could at least hold their own on a pick and roll, available every year to pick up just off the scrap heap. These guys are out there, and I think, you know, as long as they're going to be, you know, and looking forward at their salary cap structure, I mean, even after Noah is gone, you got the KP extension coming, and at some point or another they're going to try to make a splash in free agency. It's, you know, even if it's $8-10 million, it's gonna come back to bite you.
I would much rather they sign Kyle O'Quinn to like a long backup center extension and just let Kanter walk.
Totally. I'm a huge Kyle O'Quinn fan, probably irrationally so.
He's a positive player. I mean, he's got a positive net rating, one of like only like five Knick regulars, which isn't everything. But to me, that's something that backs up my eye test, where he does enough in enough facets of the game. Yeah, he's frustrating sometimes. Like, he tries
totally,
to.
But that's why he's a backup.
That's why he's a backup center. And you play him 15, 20 minutes a night. Like, he can keep the ball moving in a motion offense. He does have good vision. He's got, like, okay, you know, like, passing ability. He can protect the rim, even though he's undersized. Like, he's had a bunch of games where he has, like, 2-3 blocks. Not every game. I know, obviously, he'd be leading the league. But, like, he goes out there and once in a while can, like, kind of dominate on that end. And he can play, like, acceptable defense. And he's got, like, I would actually, he's, like, maybe the only guy on the Knick who I want to take a couple more mid-range shots. Because, like, he's really...
Because it seems like he never misses from 16 to 18 feet.
Well, they give it to him wide open a lot. And if you're giving it to you wide open, you gotta like, spread the defense a little bit. Like, so, that's all.
I love Kyle O'Quinn. If you look at some of the advanced numbers from last year's complete and total dumpster fire, he was, again, by some metrics, the best Nick on that team. And just, again, the eye test. When he comes in the game, even if the team's getting beat in his minutes, you don't feel like he's the reason that that's happening.
Right.
Whereas Kanter, to me at least, a lot of the time, you could point very clearly to the fact that it's his lack of rim protection. And you know what? I'm in the process of working on a piece on Kanter, so I don't want to give too much away, but I would just encourage every fan who has their doubts about Kanter to go up and look at some of his lineup numbers without Kristaps Porzingis. They're not pretty.
Yeah. And
so
with Kristaps, I think it's an especially bad fit, because I almost feel like in 2018, like, you can't have both your five and your four be bad at closing out on three-point shooters. Like, I think there's so much, like, in-and-out play against the Knicks when they're on defense. And with those two guys, like, having a little bit of trouble closing out, it's, like, disastrous.
And, hey, we're burying the lead here, which is that Porzingis is going to come back from this injury that, you know, nobody's ever going to know really why it happened. But if he's out there always trying to run out on three-point shooters, do we think that that maybe wasn't the best thing for his knee over the last couple of years? It's something they have to pay attention to, and it's something that absolutely has to go into every decision they make with this roster moving forward, which is also part of the reason why this upcoming draft is so exciting, because there's a couple of players, I think, that are going to be there when the Knicks figure to pick who are going to be perfect to play that 3-4 hybrid role to allow KP to slot more times to the five.
Do you have any favorites out of those? I haven't had much time to like research the potential draft picks this year yet. I will. We'll have many episodes about that when the time is right, Locked On Knicks fans. But yeah, I'm curious what you think.
I'm going to go with BAB, which is Best Available Bridges. I know they're not obviously completely the same. One's a little bit more of a wing. His brother on Michigan State is a little bit more of a guy who could offer at least some modicum of rim protection, a little bit of a bigger body. But I love both of those kids. I love them both for where the NBA is going. Because you know what? It's a nice thing if you could construct your roster such that whichever big free agent decides, you know what, we're going to come and give you guys a chance, it's a good fit. It's an easy fit. And I think if you draft one of these, like, 3-4 kind of wing types, Jackson on Michigan State is another one. I like him, too. Mm-hmm. Just get some guys who could go into some different holes in the lineup so that if Klay Thompson or Kawhi Leonard in a few years, you know, I know it sounds like nonsensical at this point, but you never know. Crazier things have happened.
Mm-hmm.
You could open up a spot in the lineup for that type of player. So, but yeah, like you said, we have a lot of months to go before we have to really start thinking about those types of decisions.
So we've mentioned Kristaps's injury a number of times now. We've mentioned the term team building a number of times now. I'd like to talk about what Kristaps's injury means to how the Knicks should build their team. You had mentioned kind of in the lead up to the show when you and I were talking about what we were going to discuss that you thought it might be interesting to dip into, you know, what this means for the Knicks and how they build their team and how they approach, let's say, like free agency in 2019. So I'm curious what your thoughts are there.
Well, my thoughts before the injury were pretty clear. I thought that they needed to preserve 2019 cap space at all costs. And I got a lot of pushback on that from fans, mostly because they're like, look, we've seen this before. 2010, we did it, and look what happened. And my argument to them was, well, this is a little bit of a different story now because, A, there's a superstar, young superstar in place. And also, you didn't need to make a whole lot of moves like sending Jared Jeffries out with a first-round pick attached to him to clear up cap space. All you needed to do was move Lee for, you know, no salary coming back, which they'd be able to do in the next year, and waive and stretch Noah. And there you go. There's your max cap space. Now that Porzingis' injury has happened, realistically, is there any chance that this team is even decent next year? I mean, I think it would be mildly shocking, to put it lightly, if they were a 500 team when he came back from injury. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I was about to say, like, to stop you briefly. If they are a 500 team next year or around there when Kristaps comes back, they have hit on, like, an instant superstar in the draft. Like,
totally.
A normal rookie who could still be a wonderful player in his career could be drafted, but unless they're, like, an outlier, like, immediate superstar, like Magic Johnson, LeBron James, you know, to a lesser extent, like a Ben Simmons who's, like, redshirted his freshman year and then, you know, came back and have, like, such a huge impact. Even him, there's a lot more going on in Philly. But, like, God, I want to, like, puke having just brought up a 76er in this conversation. But, yeah, so,
hey,
like,
listen, they're going to be around for a long time. We might as well start talking about
it. Well, I mean, you know, that's one of the things that's like, as much as I've been sick of the Knicks losing and, like, kind of would have liked a playoff appearance and think and thought that it wouldn't have hurt the Knicks' development too much to, like, make the playoffs this year.
By the way.
I think the more realistic thing, if you want to actually compete for titles with the Boston, with the Philly, is you've got to get a shit ton more of, like, young talent, like, with really high upside. And this is not a blessing in disguise, because going through an ACL tear is, like, such a serious thing. But from, like, a roster construction standpoint, it is that, I think.
You're allowed to say it's not a blessing in disguise while at the same time thinking a few years forward and looking back and being like, wow, that turned out to be the best thing that happened to us. So I think both of those things are, you know, perfectly fine. But so, again, barring them hitting the ultimate lottery in this year's draft, they're not going to be very good next year. And if they're not going to be good, very, very good next year, is a Klay Thompson or a Kawhi Leonard or a Kyrie Irving or a Jimmy Butler or a Kemba Walker going to want to come here in 2019? Probably not. Yeah. So if that's the case, do you take a page out of the book of some other teams who have decided, hey, if we're not going to be good for at least another year anyway, let's take on some bad salary in exchange for a pick? Or another way you could go is there a player that maybe hasn't panned out fully that a team will attach to a bad contract? You know, I don't know when Miami is going to give up on Justice Winslow, but I'm pretty sure that it's going to be coming at some point.
That's interesting.
That's a guy. I mean, there's other ones that are always out there. I mean, Stanley Johnson's a little bit lower rung guy for me, and I actually wrote a piece a few months ago arguing that they should not look at him because his shooting numbers just haven't improved at all. But even him, he's looked better the past few weeks. There's always teams out there that are looking to shed salary, and they will pay for the right to do that. So if you're going to be bad next year, it's something that, you know, I don't think Perry is going to go that route, but it's they have to think about it.
I do think they should definitely, like you said. Yeah, I think they should keep those options open. I'm skeptical that they would find a package out there that would make sense for them to do that. Cause even
so
when,
am I.
Yeah, even like even when they're like teams are shedding salary, like how often do they attach like a mid first round pick? And would you want to take on an additional year of like really bad salary for like the 25th pick in the first round? Maybe you do. I don't know. I'm like legitimately asking that.
You know what? I think there's the book on what a first round pick is worth,
like that
whatever
point system, like the 25 through 30 is worth 880 points or whatever.
Yeah. That's out the window now. I mean, I think there, I don't think anybody has a clear idea yet just how valuable teams around the league look at these things. Like New Orleans made the deal for Mirotić, and you know, Chicago took on the Omer Asik salary. That pick is going to wind up being like the 15th pick on the draft. They could turn around the Pelicans a few years from now and rue the day that they made that trade. Right. And I think teams around the league are going to start to turn around and really value those picks that much more. But just back to my point, that's all the more reason why if you could explore those types of possible deal like that, you know, maybe not for a pick in the teens, but you know, one of these future protected picks. It's something that I don't think, here's my point, I don't think it was in the equation before, and I think it at least has to be part of the discussion now.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair, and that makes a lot of sense. To kind of put a bow on the Kristaps, you know, changing the future of the, you know, franchise with this injury discussion, he did have successful ACL surgery today.
Let's all praise whatever imaginary man in the sky that we worship for that.
Well, it's funny because every time, you know, a team announces that someone's had surgery, it was successful surgery. But yes. But it was nice that they did. Sometimes they find like cartilage tears that they weren't aware were there or that kind of thing, and we haven't heard anything like that. So That is good news. But Kristaps, he's got a long run ahead of him. He's got at least for a couple weeks, going to be sitting on his ass for a lot of the time. So I'm wondering what you, Jonathan, think. If you were laid up, if you were going to recommend something he should watch or read or listen to, maybe and this could be your favorite show of all time, or maybe the collected works of King Crimson, something that he'll need to spend some time figuring out why he likes, anything. What would you recommend to Kristaps? While he's recovering,
I'm gonna go out on a limb, and I don't think that Kristaps, because he's 22, and the show I'm about to mention went off the air probably when he was still a pretty early teenager. I bet you he's never seen a single episode of The Sopranos.
Yes.
And I know that there are those out there who would argue that The Wire is the better show. But if I had Kristaps here for a mere 30 seconds, my plea to him would be get yourself some HBO On Demand in that hospital room and just go ahead and start from episode one, and you will not be disappointed.
Now you're just kissing up because you know that is the closest show. That is the best show of all time, hands down. Probably the best piece of pop culture. I've rewatched them both a bunch, Sopranos and The Wire. The Wire is excellent, but when you start rewatching it, it seems to show a little bit more than The Sopranos do.
I had the pleasure of, my wife and I met a few years ago. We've been married for 3 years now. We had a baby a year and a half ago. She had some more downtime. Kids sleep a lot, what have you. Mm-hmm. She's like, I'm going to watch some show in my spare time. I'm like, well, fear not. Here's what you're going to do. And I got to watch the whole show again with her. And let me tell you, it was just as good the second time around.
It's the funniest show of all time.
Well, and when you're an Italian who was born and raised in Staten Island, the jokes that other, someone watching that somewhere in the middle of Oklahoma probably aren't getting.
I do wonder about that, because I grew up in Jersey, but my whole family's from Strong Island. Every christening, every Easter, every New Year's Eve, every Christmas Eve, we're out there. And so it's minus most of the most violent parts of it. It's oh, that's my family. The Sopranos is my family. I get it.
I wish I could disagree, but I'd be lying. So, Kristaps, if you're in the hospital room and you're listening to Locked On Knicks, take our advice. We won't steal you wrong. You can thank us later. Just go for it. Do the right thing.
Yeah. And despite what the haters say, the final episode is fantastic. And
I will second you on that one.
I wouldn't have it end any other way. I would not have this podcast end any other way but us both praising The Sopranos.
Don't stop believing, Kristaps. Don't stop believing Knicks fans. There are brighter days around the corner.
Jonathan, it's been great talking to you. Is there anything you want to plug before we say goodbye?
No, just hit me up on Twitter, JC Macri NBA. I am dropping usually a couple pieces a week on something or other. Always looking for new readers, new followers, getting to some interesting discussions on the Knicks with. And, just want to thank all the listeners for tuning in.
All right. Yeah, Jonathan is a wonderful Twitter follow. He is active and engaged, and his writing is fantastic. So you should definitely check that all out. Thanks again, John.
Absolutely, James. Good time.
Man, another good conversation with another smart, fun, thoughtful member of the Knicks media. We're really building a universe over here at Locked On Knicks. I hope you guys are enjoying it. That's it for today. I want to thank you so much for listening. If you got a moment, do 1,700 things for us. Rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to the podcast. Tell your friends about the podcast. Help spread the word. I can't do this all myself. Come on. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks. Follow me on Twitter at NBA Injury Report. and be chill to each other. Is that so much to ask? Be nice. Be a dick if you have to, but like, be funny about it. Unless someone really deserves it. You know what I mean? All right, that's it. Have a good day. Come back tomorrow. Locked On Knicks. Peace.